Hi, it's Amy Siskin of The Weekly List and author of the book, The List. And welcome to episode 145 of The Weekly List podcast. This is the 11th segment in a section called Democracy at Risk. Welcome. Since authoritarianism is such a central part of what we have discussed in this project and in this podcast, I want to start by talking about Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, and the role that that is playing in his unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. As we record this podcast, we have finished the sixth week of his invasion. We talked about the first 2 weeks in our last segment. I want to note, as we discussed last time, that Putin is isolated, as often happens with authoritarian leaders, strongmen. That had been exacerbated during the pandemic, where he was basically alone for a few years and had been reading up on a version of Russian history that has been recorded, reading up about historical figures. It's been reported like Peter the Great and Ivan the Terrible and Stalin, and fancied himself as a conqueror of sorts, modern day, to replicate the USSR, put it back together piece by piece. It's also become clear, as this invasion has played out, that his small circle is, as happens in authoritarian regimes, terrified to tell him the truth. That things are not going as planned, that in the first week they did not capture Kiev in the first 24 to 48 hours, that the airport that they were trying to capture outside of Kiev to use as a way to bring in troops, as a launching pad, that failed. In the first week of the invasion, the media pundits, the intelligence agencies, the military around the world largely thought Kiev would fall in 24 to 48 hours. In the second week, the conventional wisdom switched to it will fall any day now. And then as we get into this podcast and what's happened by week three of this invasion, things had stalled. Russian troops had stalled. It started to become clear that, well, Vladimir Putin fancied himself the next Peter the Great. He was much more of a Donald Trump. It turned out that basic planning that Russia's military would have needed to be able to do in order to complete their mission was not properly done. The troops were not getting food. They were not able to get fuel. Morale started to turn. And yet, because Putin is an authoritarian and had isolated himself, he did not fully know, according to UK and US intelligence, what was playing out. Advisors and aides who did tell him the truth were put under house arrest, reportedly. So largely, the version that Putin knew of what was happening was in and of itself limited and possibly not true, which made things even more frightening as the weeks played out. Another aspect of authoritarianism is the lack of concern for human life, the abject cruelty. And the other thing we started to see as this invasion continued to play out and Russia was stalled and Russia was failing in its quest to conquer Kiev is brutal, brutal attacks against civilians and civilian places such as hospitals, schools. A town in the south called Mariupol became a central focus of the Russians. They bombed indiscriminately, killing civilians, starving them off from getting food and water and electricity and basics. And let's not forget, this is wintertime still. In week three, there was a vicious slaughter after all the bombing that had been done in Mariupol. And people, mostly at this point, it was women and children and the elderly, were seeking refuge in the famous Mariupol theater. Outside of that theater, in bold letters, in capitalized letters, the word children was written so that if there was to be bombing, they would avoid this, that the Russians would avoid this as a target. However, Russia bombed that target indiscriminately, killing hundreds. The body count is not still out. But that is, again, the targeting of civilians that has been common for Putin to do in war as a strategy. We talked about that in this project, the way Trump approached authoritarianism in the United States, that cruelty was the purpose, to show cruelty, to cower people. That is a tool of authoritarianism. The other tool of authoritarianism that Putin has used is to starve off knowledge and of the media. Not only, as we talked about last time, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, other channels of communication were cut off, but as we discussed, the Duma, which is the Russian parliament, had enacted laws making it illegal to even say that this was an invasion. And all of the remaining media outlets that are not Russia State TV have left at this point, some under threat of, again, this 15-year sentence, and others by their own volition. So if you are still in Russia as a Russian citizen, all you are getting now is news from Russia State TV. At this point, 200,000 plus Russians have fled Russia because of Putin's invasion. I want to also talk about this cruelty not only is directed at the people of Ukraine, his lack of care for human life also impacts his own people. The troop losses for the Russian military, you know, in addition to their being incompetent, have been staggering. The figures vary that we hear, but somewhere around 18,000 Russian soldiers have been killed already. That constitutes somewhere between 10 to 15% of all the soldiers that were there to begin with, and perhaps somewhere in the range of 30 to 50% of those that were in the front line of Russia's attack. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin compared it to putting them through a wood chipper. That's how little Vladimir Putin cared about human life, but again, even his own citizens' human life. There started to be stories of the morale being so low of these soldiers and the coordination being so poor that they were shooting down their own planes. Some were deserting and turning themselves in because they were starving. They were not able to get supplies or clothes or fuel, and they were just basically sitting ducks. As we headed into the fourth week of battle and things started to turn, for the Ukrainians to then go on a counteroffensive and start to hit back on Russians. But at least at this point, 7 generals and 15 commanders under Putin's forces have been killed. So it became clear that it was chaos for the Russians. They were failing at their mission in Kiev. And again, by this fourth week, it started to be that the Ukrainians were taking back cities that had been occupied outside Kiev by Russian troops. So what did Putin do? He turned up the heat on civilian casualties. And Mariupol, again, became a central focus of that when they failed in some of the other southern port cities. But what is done there has been abject cruelty. There was one Sunday during this fourth week where Putin demanded that by 5 a.m. tomorrow, the people of Ukraine must turn over Mariupol to his occupation. And Zelensky instead said, no, we will not turn over a single inch of our country. And that was a major moment of defiance. And Zelensky continues to show this remarkable leadership that has had not only has his entire country, but has the entire civilized world rallying behind him. His forces have fought on, again, seeking to reclaim territories that had been occupied. And by week 5, initially in peace talks, Putin said they would pull back from 2 regions, including Kiev. That turned out to be a lie, but Ukrainian forces forced them into that and were continuing to take back land as Putin retreated and started to change their objectives, not to take over Kiev, but to basically slice the country into a North and a South Korea kind of picture, where he would continue to slice off parts of Ukraine to have them be separate and part of what would eventually be under Russian rule. As Putin has pulled back and his forces have pulled back outside of Kiev, the atrocities started to appear in the light of day. In one area called Bukha, which had been a central part of an occupation by initially Russian soldiers, but later mercenary soldiers, the cruelty was revealed with mass graves, with Ukrainian civilians with their hands and feet bound, shot, stories of rape and torture, indiscriminate looting, the entire towns just being destroyed, and just abject cruelty, for lack of a better word. There's been demands for war crime tribunals to be set up, similar to what was done at The Hague. And throughout, and since our last podcast, Zelensky has been appealing to democracies around the world to do more for the Ukrainian people, that they are the front line not only of Ukraine, but also of democracy. And that has largely had major impacts with respect to sanctions. The US Secretary of Treasury Janet Yellen said that more than half of the world now is united in sanctions against Russia, and those will have an impact. And the more immediate need has been getting weaponry so Ukraine can defend itself through to their forces. But we also enter now a very dangerous time, because what we saw in Bucha is happening many other places. As Zelensky addressed the United Nations, this is just, he said, the first place where it has been exposed to see civilians, mass graves, and all the treachery that has been conducted. And I need to repeat, as we started with this podcast, at the behest of one authoritarian who is alone and isolated. And hearing mixed news of what is actually happening and feeding propaganda to keep his own people behind him. One man is the cause of this much destruction, that over 4 million have fled the country as refugees, that thousands are dead. And today we hear, as we record this podcast, perhaps 10,000 are dead in Mariupol. And the mayor of that city comparing what has happened there to Auschwitz, saying that Russia is wheeling in crematoriums and incinerating the evidence. After the world saw for the first time in Bucha what had gone down just north of Kiev, what the Russian forces were capable of doing. Again, cruelty is the point. So we are at this dangerous time, and I just want to comment and make an overall statement that, as bad as this is, that I am saying, and how horrible what is happening in Ukraine is, that our President Biden, has done a remarkable job in uniting the world, and the United States again being the leader of democracies and having this united front that Secretary Yellen refers to, that more than half of the world economies are united against Putin, a major miscalculation. And think how differently they would be if Trump were still in office. Trump, who was anti-NATO. What would Trump have done in these circumstances? Well, he probably would have done very little or absolutely nothing. He would have been, as he was doing in the days before the invasion, cheering on Putin, saying he was savvy and a genius. Mike Pompeo had been cheering on Putin. So imagine the world and how different this would be if Trump were still in office. But what has happened is Biden has held the world together. NATO has been reinvigorated. The US is reevaluating our troop levels in Europe because of this threat. But you see now democracy standing firm. Even as I mentioned last week, for the first time, Fox And CNN and MSNBC, just as a bellwether, are reporting similar messages where Russia is the bad guy and Ukraine is the good guy. That's the first time we have seen the three networks as a barometer having a similar narrative. And what's happened? Pew Research did a poll in terms of looking at the confidence that American people have in Vladimir Putin. Only 6% of Americans have confidence in him. That's down from 37% before the invasion. And of that 6%, only 5% of Democrats and 7% of Republicans have confidence in Putin. So it just goes to show you when the truth and the facts are reported in a country, how America has adjusted to what Russia's role is in this. In terms of confidence in Zelensky, 72% of Americans are confident in Zelensky. More Democrats than Republicans, but again, remember under Trump, how we were much more aligned with the authoritarian regimes and how the notion was, what can be wrong with Russia? They're our friend. The bad news in the world construct and the world order of things, Hungary, which had been relatively neutral despite its leader's alliance with Putin, did hold an election this last week, and Orban did win a fourth term. Orban himself has been an authoritarian-like figure, so that is disappointing, and obviously the world order that is continuing to be up against whether we are heading into a time of authoritarians and oligarchs running the world versus heading back on a road to democracies, which are uniting against Putin. This invasion might be a uniting moment on that front. And as we finish these 6 weeks, and Putin now is trying to rally his troops back to different areas, separatist regions where he can claim a victory ahead of May 9th. We'll see what happens. But as he does that, the thing we need to watch is what's happening in Mariupol, what's happening in these other cities in Ukraine outside Kiev, where indiscriminate killing of civilians has become the point. The point is cruelty. The point is putting the people under attack into submission. That is authoritarianism. So while this is happening on the world stage, just a snapshot of what's happening back at home, and unfortunately, not much. And here we are now, we're 15 months into the Biden administration. We've had this January 6th commission in place. They continue to call witnesses to subpoena, some luck, some not luck in getting Trump regime officials to cooperate. Jared Kushner and Ivanka have testified, but all of this has been behind closed doors. So one thing I have continued to fear and call out about is the American people are no longer along on this January 6th commission. Early on, and now it's last summer, almost a year ago, there were public hearings where we got to see and hear from the officers who were involved that day and what happened. And that is how you keep the American people with you. But now all we get are little leaks here and there, little tidbits that Ivanka testified or Jared testified or so-and-so refuses to testify. And other than Steve Bannon, who the Justice Department did then, bring forward to court under for criminal contempt, and that's lagged on until July. No one else in the Trump regime who has refused to cooperate, including his chief of staff, has been pursued by the DOJ, even though there's been referrals of contempt from the January 6th commission. The Department of Justice continues to receive criticism for their lack of indictments or any action. The reporting indicates that they are casting a broad net, which, great. They've arrested and tried more than 700 participants in the rally. The head of the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys have been charged with conspiracy, but still nobody from the Trump regime has faced any sort of consequences from the Department of Justice. We have an election in November, midterms. Midterm elections don't typically go well for the party that's in control. So we could lose the House, and that would shut down the January 6th House committee. It would perhaps hamper, in part, what the DOJ could do. So time is passing, and my concern continues to be, when we talk about authoritarianism at home, if there are not consequences, then what happened with this attempted coup becomes normalized. It becomes a dry run for 2024. Even other accountability, like criminal charges by the Manhattan DA, the new DA Alvin Bragg, decided to not pursue indictments, even though there was a grand jury seated to hear, to grant subpoenas and others. He decided not to bring criminal charges against Trump and dropped that for Trump's intent to break the law by inflating members of the Trump organization. So here we are, folks, heading into 2022. And not only do we have the balance of the House and the Senate, but we also have key states that we've talked about. We have positions like Attorney General, Secretary of State, Governor, up for election in 2022. In Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, Georgia. Why are those states familiar? Because those are the states that Trump tried to use to overturn the results. He now has his cronies running for those positions in 2022 ahead of 2024. So you can sort of see the storm clouds gathering if we do not have some consequences for not only Trump, but for members of his regime for what happened on January 6th. And Trump consequences for Trump of any sort for what has gone down. It will have been a dry run for 2024 if things don't go his way and he is the candidate, or if there are other Trump-like candidates like Ron DeSantis in Florida, and these continuing rules in Florida and Texas and Oklahoma to ban abortion, to make it illegal to say gay or to have books read by our children that mention LGBTQ. These are all the signs of authoritarianism that are happening quietly back at home. So please pay attention if you're listening to this to the upcoming election. It's not that far away and it's extremely important. Until then, everyone stay safe and stay involved. Signing off.